Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. As always, Alan and Doug here today to be able to chop it up, talk some hoops, and we are graced to be able to get an opportunity to join with the current assistant coach, the Dayton Flyers, Coach James Kane. Coach Kane, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, guys. I greatly appreciate it.
You got it, brother. Good to see you.
We're excited to be able to get to chop it up with you. I know you're a young coach still, but you do have, and you've had some great experiences throughout to be able to share with other people. I know you've coached some great people, coached some with some great programs, and even worked alongside some great people. But for you as a young coach, nonetheless, just looking back, like, we always like to ask everybody what the reasoning to get into coaching was, but also just especially for you, what was your why, but ultimately the reason that kind of pushed you and led you into this profession?
That's a great question. In high school, I played 4 years of high school basketball. I had four different head coaches in my 4 years, and I never transferred. I stayed in the same high schools. I've always looked for that structure, for that discipline. I went to the University of Florida, was fortunate enough to get into there, and I just wanted to be around basketball, but wanted to be around a team. And I was extremely competitive. I didn't want to lose that competitive nature that I had as a kid. So I just got involved with the women's basketball team there with Carolyn Peck. And she's still a very close friend of mine to this day. She brought me under her wing, and I needed a job in college as well. So I was a practice player and I worked in the front office. And then I went to school. Florida had some online classes, so I was able to do those at night. I worked a 9-to-5 job in school. And then from 3 to 5, I was a practice player for 4 years. And with that experience, I was able to meet Anthony Grant. My junior year of college, I'm thinking back now, my junior year of college, I played intramurals. I was on a team that won the championship for the student body, and we were able to play Billy Donovan, Anthony Grant, and Major Parker, one of my good buddies, Major Parker, who passed away. So, in peace, mate. We were fortunate to play them, and Anthony dunked on me, stared me down one time, and Billy Donovan crossed me up and hit a three in my face, and we were talking, and just from that moment on, I was able to build a relationship with Anthony, and they went on. I'm trying to think back now, I actually graduated and went to the Charlotte Bobcats as an intern, worked for Kenny Williamson, the Eggman, Bernie Bickerstaff, and Ed Tapscott, and then I left the Charlotte Bobcats and went back to Florida, and that was the time that the Gators won their first national championship under Billy Donovan. Anthony was able to get the VCU job, Virginia Commonwealth, and our paths crossed again in a back stairwell when he was cleaning out his office with his boxes and his wife, Chris. We started talking again, and the rest is history. I was able to come up there as a GA, and he's taken me under his wing ever since then. I'm very fortunate, very grateful for the opportunity. And to answer your question, my why, at that early age in my career, my why was my competitive spirit and wanting to be part of a team. It's changed over the years. As you get older, close to my 20th season in this profession. And now my why is the people that I'm with every day. My boss, Anthony, the assistant coaches that I work with every single day, the players, support staff, my family. My why, obviously, I still have that competitive nature in me. Don't get me wrong now. My why is the people that I'm with.
Yeah.
I just want to say real quick, simple fact of you getting dunked on and then this whole camp thing transpired. Like, we can't overlook that fact. I apologize, but I have to.
Yeah, this was probably 20 years ago. There's video out there somewhere. I don't know where it's at, but there's video out there of Anthony. I remember like it was yesterday, because when Anthony Grant stared, you know, you feel it. And so he definitely dunked on me. And then Billy Donovan, I think they were at that age, at that time, I was 20. 21 years old maybe, and they were like in their mid-30s, and they still had a lot of game left in them. They played, competed. It's definitely fun to watch. It's a great story to talk about now as we're older, but yeah, those guys definitely could hoop back then too.
Yeah, fight like hell to keep that video from resurfacing just for yourself. Yeah, we're funny. In an age where people love to relive and rub your nose in it social media wise. If you can fight to have that thing destroyed somehow, then do what you got to do. But was there one of the four coaches, which I'd never heard that before? You hear that in college now, because a player can literally legitimately be four different places in his college career now. I've never heard of four different coaches in high school. Was there one of them in particular that was that kind of stood out as an inspiration to you as a player to want to be a coach? Or did they all in their own way collectively do it? Or how did that play out?
Yeah, that's obviously, no one's asked me that question before. I thinking about that, I had a high school coach, Gary Williams, who tried to help me off the court. I'm very, very grateful for that opportunity. Try to help me become a young man and just learn and understand the opportunity you had playing the game. And then Sean Schroeder, it's funny that you asked me that. Sean Schroeder is a head coach in Michigan. And I lost touch with my coaches from high school. I just went back and Googled some names and found out he was in Michigan. And I just popped up on him a couple years ago, just out of the blue, and went to one of his practices. And I was like, hey, man, do you remember me? And he remembered me, which was great. And since then, we've been staying in contact. And he really showed me like the structure. I've only had him for 1 year, and it was one of our best years in high school. And he really showed me like the structure and the discipline that you actually have to have. And that's something that we didn't have in high school. And I had to learn, to be honest with you, I learned a lot from Anthony, how to become a man on and off the floor, how to become a coach, morals and values. Anthony's someone that I hold dear to my heart, someone that I continue to learn every day from.
Yeah, for sure. And I was curious about that. And that's cool that you reunited with your high school coach. Anyone out there listening to us, I would highly suggest that they do that. I got a chance to do it a couple of years ago because mine lives about 30 minutes from me here in Indy. And we went to lunch a couple of years ago for 2.5 hours. And I got a chance to thank him because he's the guy that sat me down and actually told me, I think you got a good mind for the game. You should look into being a coach. Mm-hmm. And so when people tell you that, it's kind of like what we're supposed to do for players, right? We're supposed to see it in them before they see it in themselves. So you never forget those people that have that impact on you.
Definitely. And like you said, I definitely wanted to make sure I had an opportunity to thank him face to face.
For sure.
So it was something that was important to me.
Yeah. Awesome.
And I want to make sure to note too for everybody, like, as you just said, I know you obviously are still working with him. And for those who don't know, he's talking on Anthony Grant, who's the current head coach over at Dayton right now. But like, you have followed him, and not only just him, but also Steve Prohm. Like, you've had two coaches that you have worked alongside throughout, I want to say almost not all of, but majority of your career, right? Mm-hmm. As you said, VCU, Dayton, and both of these guys, like that relationship. And that's why I was laughing about playing against them so much too, is because you go from just playing against them to now that's making up a lot of your career. So just talk about, one, building the relationships from the jump, but then also just being able to follow two prominent head coaches and what it's meant to be able to just go from one stop to the next with them throughout this.
Yeah. So I've been very fortunate to be around some great people, obviously two head coaches that are very successful in this business. Anthony was obviously an organic relationship when I was younger. Quick story, when we were at Alabama, Anthony and Prohm was a graduate of Alabama. So they were talking about scheduling a game that summer. And Prohm just got hired at Murray State and needed a third assistant. And back then, it was hard to get opportunities to become assistant coaches. You have a lot of doors shut in your face. You just got to keep grinding it out and keep trying to meet new people. And I was at a point where I was a support staff for about 6 years. And I had to make a decision. Do I want to become an assistant coach? Do I want to go back home and do AAU or high school? Or do I want to try to stay in college? And during that conversation with Anthony and Prohm about scheduling, Anthony was able to give my name for that third assistant job. And Prohm was looking for a young up-and-coming guy that had some ties in the Southeast. And gratefully for Steve, he gave me an opportunity. He didn't have to. He didn't know me from the next guy. It was all just a reference from Anthony. And Steve was able to give me the opportunity, and the rest was history there at Murray State. We had a lot of success. And Steve and Anthony are great people, but they're also different. So I was able to learn different things from each one of them and see what else was out there. And Anthony gave me some great advice at that time. He said, I didn't want to leave Anthony, but he said, at that time, you have to leave the nest in order to gain the experiences, in order to come back. And now you have 5 assistant coaches, so it's a lot easier to get those experiences at the place you're at now. But back then, you would have to leave in order to move up in this profession.
Mm-hmm, for sure. What was the biggest difference between the two? And I don't mean to make that one better or the other, because mm-hmm. Sometimes people, when they hear difference, they think, oh, you're pitting one guy against the next. They're both outstanding. what made those each guy unique? Let me just say it that way. That's a better way of saying, because nobody can make that distinction of, oh, Mays just trying to say Prome is better than that's a society we're in right now. But what made each guy, we know a little bit about Anthony, but get into Prome a little bit and what made him unique as a coach.
Yeah, Steve was very hands-on. He was able to work his way up from former player to GA to a support staff to assistant coach. So Steve was able to know and dissect everything across the board that needs to happen within the program, whether it's support staff, scheduling, camp. One thing I did not know when I was with Anthony is I didn't know how to break down transcripts, right? And Steve is one of the most phenomenal coaches that I've seen break down, be able to go into a high school, get the transcript from the guidance counselor, and he's able to break it down within 5 minutes. And it's unbelievable. And he tells the kid, the guidance counselor teachers back then, what they needed to do in order to get qualified. So I had to learn that. When I have obviously learned it with the help of Matt McMahon as well. He was a guy that was on staff with us to where I valued his intelligence, and I was able to ask him questions, and he was able to teach me. That was very unique to me because that's something I've never seen before. Now, times have changed a little bit with that, but it's still good to know in terms of transfers and their percentage towards graduation and things like that. Steve was very hands-on. I had to learn. I was very green my first year as an assistant, and he was very patient to where he was able to teach me throughout the season. We had a tremendous success that 1 year, our first year together. We were ranked as high as 7th in the country. We were the last undefeated team in college basketball. We had some really good players that Steve and that previous staff under Billy Kennedy recruited, and I was fortunate enough to be able to be around those players at that time. But Steve is strong in his faith as well off the court. So is Anthony. And that's something that I've learned off the court as well to become a better man. I saw Steve be a single head coach evolving into a father of a beautiful family, beautiful wife, to where, okay, how do you handle that transition? How do you balance all that in your time during your career? And that was something I was able to learn from as well.
That's great, because especially not only are you just taking away like stuff from basketball, you're taking away things that are completely bigger and better, like something that's off the script of basketball and more onto just life. You're learning more about being a human being at that point, which ultimately all relays into being a coach. But one thing I want to make sure to bring up too, and I know we were talking about it a little bit prior to hopping on here, is in your experiences and with the coaches that you have been with, you've been at Murray State, you've been at Iowa State, and there's two prominent names that come to mind that you have coached, that you have recruited and worked alongside. Those would be Tyrese Haliburton and John Morant. Now, with that being said, I know like the coaches that you have worked with also, from what I saw and heard, that they've highly recommended, said you're a strong recruiter, you're exceptional at game planning and have an outstanding player development side of things. But with that, just talk about Tyrese, talk about Ja. Now, we know what they are capable of, and obviously they're both two high-end, high-level caliber athletes right in the NBA now. Talk about what they were in high school and what you guys saw going into college that kind of made them so stand out to you and make them so unique.
So to start with Ja, I was able to see Ja in high school at an AAU event. Obviously, the story's out there. And with his athleticism, with his smoothness, I was able to catch my eye in the back gym. I stayed an extra day to watch him play 5-on-5 live. And fortunately, he was playing against Tevin Brown, a kid that we were recruiting at Murray State, who was basically told us he was coming. And I was like, hey, I want to catch this kid, Ja, play against Tevin. Ja had about 29 points and like 10 assists or 12 assists. And he just blew you away with his smoothness. And Tevin had about 30 or 30 some points as well. And right then and there, Tevin calls me right after the game. He's like, yo, we need this guy. And I'm like, yeah, I know. So Ja's obviously, he's a generational talent. He's phenomenal. His heart is something that people and the media doesn't talk about enough, in my opinion. Obviously, you go through life, you go ups and downs. But there's things that the outside world really doesn't know about him. And I'll just share one story because I know you guys want a story. Couple of years, when my son was first born, Ja, I saw Ja down in Memphis, and he gave me a box of 6 or 7 sneakers, Nike sneakers, at different sizes, to where year by year, my son could wear those shoes. And he said, here you go, coach. And nothing of it. And that just tells you the type of heart that he has. And he gets it from his mom and dad, who I try to tell everyone, growing up, these two parents would cook and entertain the whole entire community back home. And people will come play basketball and they'll cook on the grill and they'll open up their doors and open up their heart to the town just for kids to play and have something to do. And that's who Ja's a sweetheart, in my opinion. He's a sweetheart and doesn't get talked about enough to where he donates back to the community of Memphis. He does a lot of things with his camps during the summer for the kids. He just doesn't show up for 30 minutes at his camp. He's in the trenches for about 3 to 4 hours. He's doing drills. He's coaching the kids up. He's talking to parents. And it's him and his whole entire crew, Team Morant, to where you could put on a camp and not even show up or just show up for autographs. And he's there for 2 days straight. Ja is very special. The fact that we still have a relationship, the fact that his parents and his family still have a relationship with myself speaks volumes of who they are. People move on and time moves on and people go their separate ways in life. And obviously, we've stayed connected. I'm just very fortunate to have him in my life and his family in my life because we make each other better.
It's funny. The public usually only gets about maybe 10 to 15% of the real story. And the ability, and I'm not a conspiracy theorist and I'm not saying all that, but the ability for articles and interviews and things like that to shape what maybe people should think or create this perception versus really knowing somebody, mm-hmm. You know, we only get about 10 to 15% of the story, especially when you're talking about these guys, right? Mm-hmm. Like there's people that would just rather flat out deny that versus try to open themselves up and actually accept it because they've already got and they would call it infractions, but technically he never broke the law. Mm-hmm. He broke a policy, but he didn't break the law. And so just for you to share that about these dudes, that's a really big deal, man, because like I said, General Joe fan and 15th row eating nachos, they just think, but this guy's an entertainer. I want this guy to entertain me. But they have no interest in knowing what they're really about. As coaches, we do. I love that stuff. But that's great, man. That's great to share that.
He's phenomenal. And I'll share another story with you. We were my first year. This actually was very impressive to me because I didn't think they would do this. But my first year at Dayton, we played in the Charleston Classic, right? Mm-hmm. And
great tournament,
College of Charleston, and Ja and they grew up about 45 minutes away from there, if I'm not mistaken. And Ja's already in college. I've never coached Ja. I left Murray State and went to Dayton. We obviously stay in contact. We have a tournament going on down there, and the game before us went into double overtime. And Ja's mother, Jamie and Tanaya and T, they traveled to come watch our game. Not only do they travel, they stayed for the double overtime game. So our game's about an hour and a half, 2 hours delayed, and they stay to watch it, which to me, that meant a lot to me. Something very small like that. They made a decision to stay. It was an inconvenience for them, and they still decided to stay. And that just tells you the type of people they are. I'm telling you, the media doesn't do them justice sometimes. And I'm just excited for this upcoming season for him because I think he's going to do some special things there.
No, that's great. And then going back to like what you were saying about the media and everything, I feel like a lot of it's solely the game of telephone. You know what I'm talking about? Like the game of telephone, the kids game where one person whispers something in another person's ear. And then by the time it hits the 10th or 15th person, the story is completely different. That is my portraying of the media is somebody puts something out there. They think it's right. They put it out there. But then it's now this person hears it. But then they're going to go relay that message to their friend and completely tell the story wrong. And then it's just going to complete. It's all rumors. And don't get me wrong. Sometimes there's probably some truth behind a lot of it, but not all of it. And yeah, to your point, like you obviously have a personal relationship with these guys. But what that also says is not only do you have the relationship with them, that's what you have to do, whether this is Ja Morant or not. This is before Ja was quote unquote him, right? Like he obviously was a well-known high school athlete, but at the same point, this was before all of that. So you got to be able to make those and form those relationships with the guys while you're recruiting them to be able to, and then continue that relationship after. Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
So let's talk a little bit about, we've talked about who you've worked with, people that you've worked alongside. Let's talk about Coach James Kane. Narrow it down a little bit. Just now, I first want to say, before I ask any question, I'm asking more individually, not about the program or Dayton or anything like that, I guess, to make sure to clarify. But just building a scout, as I said, I know coaches have mentioned that you have a strong game planning background. So just like building a scout, what do you look for when you're watching film? What's the first couple things that maybe your eyes go to? And then is it more personnel? Is it actions? Is it something completely different? What do you look for when building a scout and game plan?
First and foremost, at an early age, I was able to understand how important film was when I first got into business, because Anthony Grant watches film religiously. And I was able to see what he was seeing and use those ideas towards my career. And then working with Steve Prohm, he's the same way. Watches film religiously. He's able to break down and be able to teach guys certain ways. And I was fortunate enough to be around some great assistants throughout my time that are head coaches now. Obviously, Matt McMahon, Alan Edwards was at Wyoming, John Brandon, Tony Pujol. I can name them all. But every stop I had, I was working with some great assistants at Iowa State, was Danielle Robinson, David Hobbs. Learned a lot from David Hobbs when he was the head coach at Alabama. And now I work with two great assistants now, Carter Greer and Jermaine Henderson. I learned from not only head coaches, but I learned from assistants that I've been with as well. In terms of a scout, Matt had this quote, and I use it to this day. There's no such thing as being too organized. So I try to be as organized as possible. I look at the KenPom sheets to start, just briefly for a few minutes, just to get an idea of, okay, the tempo of the team, what are they trying to do offensively? How good are they defensively? What are they good at? So I really don't dissect the analytics until the end. But to begin with it, I just wanted to get a feel, because analytics only tells you a certain story. I start watching games. And I'm old school. These new guys coming up, they're very efficient. They know exactly what they're doing. They're quick with everything. And I'm old school. I have a process. So I have a checklist. And I could do my own clips. So I watch the game, I'll clip it, I'll do all that. I want to watch the tendencies and the flow of the game and the substitution patterns at first. And I'll clip the game as I go. And I'll make a database, I'll make an organizer. And basically, I learned this from Bucky McMillan, one of my good buddies in the business. He made it very simple. There's four quadrants, right? There's press offense, there's half-court offense, and there's press defense, and then there's half-court defense. But in each of those quadrants, I added probably about five or six bullet points for my checklist. Like, obviously, let's start with press offense. I'll look at the alignment. Who's taking the ball out on makes and misses? What's their press releaser? Who do they use as their press releaser? If you come with a trap at this angle, where are they rotating from offensively, trying to take that away? And that's important with Anthony because we're a pressing team. And then a half-court offense, start with secondaries. What are the entries in secondaries? Where are their transition attack? If the rebounds, where are they coming with? If a guard rebounds, where are they coming with? If they're on a loaded side or a single side, what are their actions? And I've learned, and I try to tell these young coaches now, when you're doing scouts, you need to learn from the head coaches on the opposing team. And one thing that I do is I listen to post-game press conferences. Okay, if they're playing a team that's similar to us and in their post game, are they explaining just a little bit on how they attack them or the preparation throughout the week? So I think post game press conferences are extremely important. And that's something that I just picked up on over the years. I listen to very intently. Going back to offense, in the half court setting, I'll organize it through families. So whatever list of, like, we have probably 10 families here at Dayton. So whatever the families are, and some families are the Horn series, Iverson family, LA family, five out, Zoom action. So each family I would have, okay, these are their options in their family. And as scout coach, you need to know pretty much everything. And we'll get to this later on. But with those families, you want to be very organized. And then, okay, what are the tendencies and what is the ratio to the plays that they run them at, to where, okay, what are the most important plays in each family? So I might take two to three. They might have eight options in a family. I might just take the top two to three. So then I go to press defense. Okay, how do they press? Do they press on makes or misses, dead ball, free throws, side out of bounds, three quarter court. So like, how do we attack their press? And then, you know, who in the game, you know, some teams, they only press with certain personnel in their game. You know, they only play zone with certain personnel in their game. So then defensively, then I identify like what type of defense are they? How do you like gap oriented? Are they up the line? Are they pressure? Are they pack line to where you just come up with a game plan on how to attack their defense underneath out of bounds, special situations? Special situations to me is a whole nother quadrant, but I have that towards the end. So one thing I would do for Anthony is once I break all that down, I'll have my database and then I'll have three spreadsheets. I would have a offensive attack spreadsheet. So this is what they do in these quadrants defensively, and this is how we're going to attack them offensively. And then I'll have a defensive prep sheet to where these are all their actions offensively, you know, transition, ball screen actions, post D, all this stuff. And this is how we're going to defend them, right? These are our principles. It's not about the play. It's about the principles and the concepts. How are we going to defend them? What are the rules? So then I would make a PowerPoint. This is, take for example, VCU. They won a championship this past year. This is VCU's rules, right? Four men, this is your rules. Five men, this is your rules. Guards, these are your rules. So then after that, I would have a special situation sheet for Anthony. This is what they do. This is what we can do. And then I think this is very important. I would have an adjustment sheet. So it's okay. What are our adjustments when this stuff doesn't work? And during the game, I would write some ideas of adjustments down and I would have them at halftime. So during the game at halftime, I would come with some ideas offensively. And then, Anthony, here are some ideas defensively that we could do for adjustments. I'm old school. I got a whole process, but it works for me sometimes, and I'm going to stick to it.
What's great about that, man, number one, incredibly organized. But when I analytics to me is a tool, but they're not a solution. Mm-hmm. I think they have to be used as a tool along the way and factored in, forward into everything else. To live or die by analytics, mm-hmm. Like I'm mid-range to the day I die. Just ask the two teams who just got finished playing how they feel about mid-range basketball. Mm-hmm. But the other thing I love that you said, and this is important, I think, for young coaches to hear, is you got to get to a point where you trust your eyes. Like, you have your systems, have your stuff in place, but you got to be able to watch a game and feel what the other team is doing and just watching and trusting your eyes. That's such a big thing. Mm-hmm. Because if you trust your eyes, a team will tell you everything that you need to know about their personality. And that's really the more than anything else is getting your guys to understand, like, what's the personality of this crew we're about to play? Mm-hmm. Because if you can figure somebody's personality, then that's one of the best ways to figure out how to cut them off at the knees. Because when you beat somebody, you're literally trying to take their personality away from them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I agree.
But trust in your eyes. I'm so glad you said that, because that's a big deal, man. Your way might take a little bit longer, a little bit more like meticulous, but like, you've got it now to, there's such a comfort zone with it, and it's effective for you.
Yeah. Hey, so, and then one thing you have to learn, and I had to learn this as a young coach, and I'm trying to get better year by year, and every team's different, but how do our guys learn? So it's, I don't want to bore them. You want to be able to hit him in quick. And I think Anthony is really good at that. I think he's phenomenal at that. So 2 days prior, we would have keys to the game edit. So we would have three different sections. So whatever the three different keys are, transition defense, half court, these are all rules. And obviously boxing out and rebounds huge to win games. So we do an edit and it's only, and he wants it 2 minutes. 2 minutes. When show what they do and then show how to stop them. A lot of people just put together a highlight tape. Don't put together highlight tape. Show what they do and then show how to stop them. And then we will go into personnel the next day, and then we'll go to half court offense or half court defense the next day, and he'll do the offense. But I think just hitting them in spurts to where we don't overload them, and being able to, some guys are visual learners. Some guys need to walk through it on the court. So, you know, I think as an assistant, you have to understand, okay, how do my guys learn and then let's adjust to them.
100%, man. No, we're in a YouTube society. So dudes are going to lock in on this thing, and on, who knows the average number of videos 18 to 22 year olds watch in a certain day. Typically those videos don't last very long, and then they're on to the next. So you've got to try to somehow in scouting mirror that. Mm-hmm. All right. You can't serve a turkey in scouting. You got to serve chicken nuggets, man.
Exactly.
I mean, that's where we are, but understanding that makes you more effective for sure.
I want to go back to this and ask this real quick, because it just came to my head. You mentioned how you have the families, you have the Horn sets, you have the Iverson sets, you find what they do and you break it down. And then I know you mentioned you usually find, we'll say a team runs Horn section. Like, do you know, you just go over with the team, the top two or three, or do you, as a coach, I'm sure you have them all down that the other team runs. You have everything down on a sheet, but like, how many of those would you actually go over during the practices?
Yeah. So I would chart them. Like, I watch at least five games. So I would chart them the frequency of what option they run the most. If there's a new option, considering their last game. And I'll try to hit two. I try to hit two in each family. Depends how many families they have. If they have a lot of families, I at least want to show the alignment of each family. Because what I don't want as an assistant is I don't want an alignment to catch our guys off guard. So I at least want to get to each alignment. And then I just have to make a call to where I show one play from each alignment, or I show two or three plays from each alignment, depending on their playbook. So I've scouted some coaches, and they keep me up at night. So
exactly.
There's some great ones out there. I'm telling you right now, there's some great ones out. Like Bill Self is phenomenal. And I don't think he gets enough credit for the adjustments he makes. In my time in the Big 12, Bruce Weber had a lot of misdirection to where you didn't know what was coming. And then I study coaches from a distance. Some I personally know and some I study from a distance. And one guy that I respect tremendously and I've learned over the years, and I've studied him from a distance because I've had his scouts, is Shaka. His pace and his spacing, the way he's evolved over the years and the five out and the players that he's had and the culture that he's built in every program is something that I try to study the way he does things. And it's very important.
Yeah, you got two of those three guys are Rising Coaches Pod alums, Dougie. So I think we're doing all right. I've been trying for Coach Self, but he's a tough nut to crack. But I think the thing you said that's a huge deal with scouting is this. Hopefully young coaches will pay attention. But even when, because you can't cover everything, because you can water your guys down. And the classic phrase is the more you give them, the slower their feet get. So you're trying to limit their thinking, and you don't want to put cement shoes on your guys because you've overloaded them with so much stuff. But I think when your principles are sound and they have a really good idea of how you want to guard certain things. So even if you don't cover it, you can say, hey, when they get to this certain family, X family, they really like to ghost screen out of this. Mm-hmm. And so then you go back to, hey, guys, remember in ghosts, until you feel contact, you're on your own. If you feel contact, boom, contact switch, do what we got to do. If you don't feel any contact, we're on your own. Ghost guy, stay with your guy. Or whatever your principle is, but that's a principle. So now, even when you don't get the chance to cover everything, your principles can carry you through those situations where you don't get a chance to cover everything. So you can actually, in film, say, hey, I'm not going to show anything on this, but they do have this certain alignment where they like to ghost a lot. Just understanding what we do when teams ghost, just remember our principles, guys. So that can actually help shorten scouting conversations when your principles are sound.
Definitely. I agree with that. And one thing I've learned from David Hobbs, he's big on not being in rotations. So when in doubt, if you're trying to be aggressive, you're trying to turn guys over, you're in rotations a lot. But when in doubt, when it comes to game-winning time, sometimes, depending on who the team is, he would always be big on staying out of rotations and making guys from over the top. And so is it like, hey, just switch everything to where you have your five-man out there. You don't have to have some tough guards to rebound, or do you play the post one-on-one and things like that. Just seeing some of the adjustments that he made in the Big 12 to me was something that I'll carry for the rest of my career.
We always say you're proud thieves. Everybody, I feel like every coach out there is a proud thief, right? I know me and Mage always joke about it, but like you always learn from other people and being able to take information from other people to ultimately.
Me and Dougie got no shame, own. Man. We got no shame about hijacking stuff.
We're spoiled,
here, man. Man, unbelievable.
I've been stealing for 20 years.
Yeah, no doubt. It's all we're
the only profession you can steal from people, right?
End up in the joint for it. So good stuff, man. My bad, Dougie.
Coach Kane, what we always like to do is just to wrap it up and put the bow on top. We like to bring you all the way back to initially where it all began, taking you back into your first position. And really just while you're at Charlotte, you're a young coach, knowing what you know now, is there any advice you would share with your younger self starting in the career in the profession?
Yeah, it's a great question. I would say there's no such thing as perfect. You know, as a young coach, you're trying to be perfect in everything. You're trying to get your hands involved in everything and not want to let anyone down. And I just learned over the years, there's no such thing as perfect. And embrace the journey. Embrace where your feet are. Everyone, not everyone, but majority of coaches are always thinking about what's next, like the next recruit or the next scout or my next job, or in 10 years, I want to be here and things like that. And I fell victim to that at a young age. And I've learned over the years through my experiences, everything happens for a reason. Every move I've made, I've been around great people. And there's things that happen for a reason personally and professionally to where it made sense at that time. And I'm very grateful for those decisions and those moves. I've been all up and down the East Coast. I've been in the South. I've been in the Midwest. I've been to different places, and I'm grateful for each stop. I'm grateful for the relationships, administration, and coaches I've been around. And my advice would be everyone's journey is different. Everyone's journey is different. So don't, comparison's a thief of joy. And just run your own race and embrace the situation and the opportunity that you're in now. And everything will work out in the end.
Yeah, no, that's you. We had lunch recently. You were talking about just the humility piece and Coach Prohm's journey in particular, like going from, and he'll get another opportunity, I'm sure. Be crazy if he doesn't. If he doesn't, then we all, none of us have a chance. Just the humility piece that sometimes our profession could use a dose of, because a lot of times guys think, man, smooth sailing, check my logo out. And the thing I love about you, and I've enjoyed getting to know you so far, is you have a humility that's kept you grounded, and you know that this thing can change on a dime. Right. And Coach Prohm's journey is an example for all of us of just how things can change on a dime.
And I would tell young coaches in this business, humble yourself. Because this business will humble you. This business will humble you quick.
And I like that.
A lot of great coaches out there. A lot of great coaches out there, man. And just learn from each other. Just learn from each other. But I would say approach this thing with some humility. And because this, if you don't, if you're in this long enough, you're eventually going to get fired. And I've been through it. I know multiple people have been through it. And everything happens for a reason. Everything happens for a reason, and maybe you hit reset and reevaluate things and find a different version of yourself, and then you get better, and then you brush yourself off and you get back in it. But definitely just approach this business with some humility, and because things can change quick on you.
That's a perfect way to tie up an episode. That is for sure. That is great. No, thank you. And I know, honestly, we say this to everybody, but genuinely mean this. Is thank you for just giving us the time to be able to come on here and chat. Not only, like, obviously, I know me and Al always say we're spoiled to be able to steal stuff from you guys, just be able to have this conversation and be in this seat, but the people that are listening too, I know they'll take away some great information. I already did. I always have a notebook sitting right next to me, and every now and then just jotting down a couple notes and going over your game planning and everything that you did there, building a scout, being able to prep for the next team, and then just the one thing I always love to say, because I think it just shines a light so much, is majority of, now we talked about building a scout, and yes, a lot of that has to do with basketball, but everything outside of that, like in the beginning of this episode, we talked about forming relationships, essentially recruiting two of the top NBA players now. It all was just relationship-based and being a good person. It's solely what it all boils down to. And that kind of thing, shed a light on that, to hear from you is great. So thank you for also just giving us the time of day to be able to talk and have this conversation.
One thing about Tyrese, I didn't recruit him. Steve Prohm recruited him and that staff recruited him. I was just fortunate enough to coach him as a freshman in college. And he was phenomenal in practice. He was winning every drill. And then his sophomore year, he broke his wrists midway through the year and he still tried to play. And he actually played about 4 minutes in the game after he broke his wrist. And I remember the day that we had to shut him down. He was trying to find excuses on how to brace his wrist up and continue with the season. So like his heart is like a heart of a lion. Doesn't surprise me that he tried to play in game seven. Knowing Tyrese, you know, he'll be around the team. He will coach. He will help try to coach the team because that's what he did at Iowa State. And his mom, Brenda, was at every one of his games after he got hurt. He could have left. Could have trained, could have left, could have went on with his NBA career, and he stayed around. That's something I wanted to share about Tyrese, man. He's also a phenomenal kid as well. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's phenomenal. Coach Kane, as we said, thank you very much, like I said, for giving us the time of day. Make sure you tell Coach Damasco as well. I know he's been on here before. We were able to have a conversation with him. Again, thank you very much.
That's my guy. That's my guy, so. I'll tell
him. We pulled him away from the links one day to be able to hop on and have a conversation with us.
Yeah, we got him.
Nice.
Another victim. But no, yeah, he did a great job. Did a great job. But yeah, please give our best to him. Please say hello to Anthony for me as well. We'd love to get him on, but I also know this isn't quite his style. He'd rather be seen and not heard. And that's what makes him special because you want to talk about quiet strength, man. I know Tony Dungy wrote a book about it, but that's Anthony to a T.
Yeah.
You know, to a T.
He's
incredible. Oh my gosh. No doubt. We appreciate it, man. This was awesome.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And for everybody out there, thank you all for tuning in. And that is another episode, the Rising Coaches Podcast. Alan Major, Doug Caputo here signing off. All you coaches, keep working and keep rising, coaches. See you all soon.
Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines.
I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together.